That's
need
fine.
24 hours before I can.
Okay.
Super. Wonderful. Thank you so much. All right. So start again. So thank you very much. Everybody, apologies for any background noise that you do hear. Please do let me know if it's disruptive. And happy new year, everybody. Welcome to January. I hope you are as excited to get forward with 2046 as many of us are. So then, just a couple of things from me. Number one is that today is your first Q&A, open Q&A. So welcome if it's your first time. And today, Peter is going to be talking about empowerment and how to make sure that you're taking the right ones and how to watch out for the bad ones. At the end of this month, so I do want to make you aware of this if you're not already. At the end of this month, on January the 31st, we are going to have the next Q&A. So normally it's the first Saturday of the month. But because Peter's off on his travels to Egypt, it needs to be a little bit earlier. So 31st of January is going to be the next Q&A. And that's all about ancestral working with ancestors. Ancestral reverence has always been an important practice in shamanic traditions. So Peter's going to explain to you why and how to do it. And that's at 10 o'clock in the morning UK time. And then following on from that at 11:30 will be the magical membership workshop on how to work with your ancestors, how to connect with your ancestors. He's going to be giving practical guidance and benefits and shamanic practices on how to do that. And as I said, straight away after those calls in the following week, he's going to be off on his little jollies all the way to Egypt and then on to moving on to Peru. So on that note, if you do want to go to Egypt, just note that this will be the last trip that Peter will be doing for the foreseeable future. So if you want to do that, you can join Kim and Kerry on the wonderful people. Magical mystery tour of Egypt. And then after that, as I said, he'll be doing the first medicine retreat of 2026. So thank you so much, everyone. I'm now going to go on mute and I will pass you over to Peter. See you in the chat. If you have any questions, do let me know. Thank you.
Hey. Hello, everybody. So we're just a few minutes away from the very center of the full moon, which is significant because this is the wolf moon. It's a time when Fenris breaks his chains. And that's very significant because what are you doing now? Going to break in the chains of illusion that's stopping your power and your understanding. So we're going to look at empowerments today. There's a few things to talk about this and how people are actually using it these days. People create these orbs, that was the orb of life and the chi balls and things. And traditionally, we had what we called a morphic field. Events happened once, creates a field which makes that easy to happen again. So it makes it very easy for something so many times, so it should get easier to do it again. It builds up an energy which can actually make things happen almost automatically. However, that's taken a long time to build up. Now, the orbs have a very useful place, but the trouble is people don't understand the limitations and to use them the wrong way because they're trying to take shortcuts for everything. And you probably find out shortcuts tend to cut you short. So the orb of life is very good because it means we often use this when I pass things on for you because it means if you do a spell once, it can be put into orb. So you can do the same, so it can actually repeat the same spell then help the same effort. However, this is quite different from the whole process of empowerment, what we call Diksha. When power is passed on, there's an ex obviously a flow of energy from a higher point to lower point. If somebody has a high power, the energy can flow into you, activate your energy, and so your energy increases. Certain powers are passed on. You'll also be seen as actually lighting a flame. Like if somebody's candle's out, you only have to light it from your candle, then theirs is lit. If you haven't got that candle, you can't light them. So think about these orbs then. When the empowerment's passed on, it doesn't quite work that way. Just because you've got an orb doesn't mean you've got the energy to pass on the empowerment. Traditionally, when we actually do these empowerments, one has to have a master level before passing it on. You work with energy for a long time to build it up, and you get a master level so you can actually pass on empowerments because the energy has to be built up. Getting an empowerment and passing on an orb just doesn't work. What you pass on an orb can only be a measure of what power you've got. It's passed on with your level of power. So if you're getting an empowerment from a master, it's not quite the same as having an empowerment for somebody who's just gathered orbs and passes them on as a business. You see many websites these days, people gathering various orb empowerments and passing them all on, like a business. When you see what large variety of orbs they've got, some have hundreds, it's obvious they have not had the time to actually develop all of those. I tend to work with certain subjects I've done all my life. Like I've done yoga since I was 8. Started city yoga when I was 19, so when I got into mantras and things. So I've had, 57 years of experience of those particular arts, in building up power, plus having a tradition from Kali, the Kali Mutt, got the lineage of this power point to pass on. Same with the God, I've released magic. I've done that for about 25 years, and I've been given the initiation of the Pentazona, which is actually the power point in the sea, which where Tuchidul keeps. So I'm actually the guardian now of the Ninth Dragon King. So this power for to passed on. So it built up over time. This is where powers can be passed on. It's not just what I've gained, but the access I've got to certain power points in the earth where magic is given. So when somebody tries to copy an orb and just pass it on without that power, it's going to be nowhere near as powerful. Those things work with things like Reiki because you can actually do that in 3 weekends to get the master level, but you can pass it on. But even then, you find some Reiki practitioners who don't know their lives are very, very powerful. Their Reiki is actually amazing. It's not the same when you first get your empowerment. One has to develop these things. And of course, the power you get, the person who's passed it on to you has to have that power. Like how they can pass it on to you. Many times things like Tenno Dalum, you can't take bullets instantly. Generally, when you have a proper empowerment for a master, you can actually take a machete cut within a week of practice to actually ensure you've got invulnerability. But when you actually met one master who could take bullets, so it's like, although they have these ideas and tradition, it's all happened overnight. These empowerments give you a boost that's equivalent to 2 to 4 years practice. It still takes practice over your lifetime to keep building upon it. And the good thing about these is that when you have more empowerments from masters who've gained those powers, you can have more powers through your life to actually keep progressing faster and faster. Otherwise, some of these empowerments, by the time you gain all these, it's more than you'd have a lifetime of time for. So, when you've got years and years to practice, having these boosts on the way can really help your progress. It's not the same as receiving these orbs from people who haven't developed that power. You get some little energy boost from it because it's an orb is passed on, energy is copied, but it doesn't give you real power. So the first thing to realize is that, first of all, the person passing you an empowerment has to develop that power by working with it. Otherwise, he can't pass it to you. Quick way to spot it is when you look at people's websites who are doing hundreds and hundreds of different empowerments. Well, how long have they been running and how long have they had to develop these? Can they really have enough time to practice all those different things? Now, there are certain arts we specialize on which we pass on because you're mastering it. So there's only certain things I pass on, which is the Javanese, the Hindu system, the old Vedic system from yoga. And there's a few other things because I worked through my life because I was born into magic from my grandmother's side. So there's other powers I pass on. But other things I don't. Just a piece of empowerment doesn't mean I can pass it on. You've got to work with it for years and gain a master level to pass power on. So that's the first thing to realize then. It takes power, it takes time to build up power before you can pass it on. An orb doesn't shortcut it. So many people like to copy these things, but copying an orb and passing it on is not the same. I know some people who use these orbs of life have the idea that you can copy anything with it, even if they haven't taken that power themselves. And to some degree, you can, but it will only pass on for the kind of energy you've got. I mean, first of all, it's not a strong energy you haven't built in. Secondly, since it's on that energy, then that's what's contaminating energy. It's not going to give you power. So there are no shortcuts. There are boosts, yes, it's not the same as shortcut, you still have to work with it. You gain a power, you have a practice to build it, and you can gain a master if you want to pass it on. It's not a quick thing of making a business by gathering lots of pounds and passing them on. That's going to cut you short, and it's not going to be the power you're looking for. Somebody who doesn't know the difference, who don't know what mill magical power can do, they might think there's something good happening here. A bit like a bit of Reiki or treatment, you get those easily, you get a bit boost of energy. Feels good, you can do something with it. But you're not going to stop bullets with it. You're not going to completely change your life and overcome all the black magic and demons and all the other things when one they're supposed to be facing in life. That takes power. That has to be passed on by a master and has to be practiced. So let's go over to questions now then. Maybe questions about empowerments, how they work, and need clarity on anything you're doing to make sure you're doing the right thing.
Thank you very much. And I really hope that you can hear me. So please tell me if you can't. So the first question comes from me. If you've received empowerments and you have been working with them, how do you know when you're ready to pass them on? And how do you go about getting permission to pass them on?
You take a master level. Now, some of them work automatic, like for instance with Chandali, from level 4 you can pass it on. But obviously, I like to have time to practice each level before you enter the next one. You don't just do 1, 2, 3, 4, then pass it on. You practice this one for at least a week, maybe longer. So you feel your Kundalini building. When your own Kundalini is building, then you can obviously pass it on to that level. It won't be as strong as a master who's got his Kundalini fully risen, but you can pass something on. So generally, by level 4, you can pass it on. Other things like Tenno Dalum and the Kodams have master levels. You practice for a while, build up your strength, you better do the machete test to make sure you can take invulnerable. Then you take a master level. let me boost your power and allows you to pass it on. Now, some
Right.
things like the dragon magic take many years. You can't pass that on. It takes about 25 years. Let's give you an idea of the time these things take. Traditionally, in my traditions I followed, it was took 35 years to be a shaman. It's a 25-year apprenticeship. Then you spent 10 years in practice on your own to find your feet before you can finally become a shaman. Then you can do it. That's kind of the discipline there is in dragon magic. To really build these powers takes time. So if you try and pass on dragon magic, it's not going to be the same level of what I pass on at all. Secondly, you'll be dispensing your energy before it builds, so it's just only holding you back. It's not doing any good. That's why I always tell people in the dragon magic, you cannot pass this on for a long time. Other things like Chandali, you pass on for level 4. Telalem, Kodams, you pass on when you've done a bit of practice down the master level. Some things may take many years to pass on. Some of the high levels, like when I give the Lilith initiations, so this is after the dragon magic courses. Again, it's part of a really deep tradition. You can't pass those on, not for a long, long time. But Chandali, Tenadalam, the Kodams, and some of the other kind of powers and things like the abundance powers and so on, you can pass on as you have a master level.
What determines whether someone has reached master level of development?
Well, for things like Tenadalam and Kodams, you'd be able to test it by the old machete test, straight on the machete, if you couldn't cut yourself. If you can't do that, you're not ready for the master level. Same with Kodams. Kodam also gives you same level of protection. You can test it with machete. Now, those who don't do the machete yet, we generally start with a pin. If you're practicing with the mobility, the pin no longer pierces your skin. So you might start with that if you're not trusting to use machete just yet. But one, before you can pass it on, you have to protect the machete test.
I'm not sure if I want to try either because I mean I've got all these cuts and bruises on me from Muay Thai, so I don't think I'll
Yeah,
be able
I mean, I still get bruises in
to
Muay Thai too because it's
go.
aesthetic and things like that because it works for serious things. Like, for instance, you might get into knife fights and get a scratch, but it won't pierce any important organs. You'll be saved where it's important. And generally, they say it's not something you can show off with. If you're going to go and get into scraps, you're going to get bruises, but it's not important. The
You mean
big
like
thing is, yes.
walking? Like walking out of a car crash.
I think so, yeah. Sam's done it, and also the time when she hit her thumb with a hammer, and the sort of thing she made your thumb black, but very minor bruising. So there are times it's expensive from serious injuries. But you're going to get minor bruises, it doesn't, unimportant things.
Does taking empowerments from multiple masters increase the amount of power we receive and how quickly we develop it?
It depends, only it's as strong as the highest master. If the ones are lower, they're not going to do any difference to you if you already had a higher one. So that it's like it doesn't add up. Basically, it only flows from the level of the master to you. It can't make more than that master's got. It's like when you've got water flowing from one thing to another. From a higher level, it only flows up to that level. You can't put several in and think it's going to flow to a higher level. It only goes to the higher to the one of, which is highest. So the strongest master is one you stick with. But of course, different masters might have different empowerments. So obviously, you might have some things with a different master if they're particularly good at that thing.
So this is a, I think it's a slightly off-topic question, but we will go there. I've been working on a recent pattern around me, always wanting not to be noticed, as this can result in others being unkind, making incorrect judgments, being jealous, dismissive, etc. I've worked on breaking the law and nemesis around this twice. I'm trying to work through the emotions around this as well, but at the same time, my life has become a disaster with people being very challenging. I'm doing point holding, but is there anything I need to do more of to try and resolve this more quickly, please?
Okay, in order to get into the emotion behind this, not this is just a law. There's basically a need to be seen, need to be recognized, which goes back to childhood need for love. You weren't giving enough attention. Thing is, whenever you need something from people, they start using you. You're giving power away already. When you're independent, you don't care what people think, whether they see you or not, because you're creating your own reality. But through our childhood, we have lacks because we didn't get enough love, weren't held enough. Those things we need to correct. You've got to go back and give your child the love it didn't get. And build up the power in the heart that was lacking, because basically, when your baby is not held, it's not being trained by its mother's heartbeat. It doesn't get the strength in the heart. It's actually an energetic thing as well as an emotional one. So you've got to actually do the healing of the heart. You've got to go back and give your inner child what they need, what they didn't get, with attention, the love, and so on, till they feel fulfilled and they don't need to seek it anymore. There's a point we grow out of that. As children, even if you're getting lots of attention, there's a point where suddenly you don't want it anymore. You've waited for your adolescence, want to go in something else, and don't want your parents' love anymore. You've done that. You've got moved on. But some people who haven't got that are still looking for elsewhere. So you have to go back and give your child what they didn't get.
This is an interesting question that has come in next. I know I have my thoughts, but I'm very curious to see what you say, Peter. Next question is, I've never tried manifesting. Is it better to start small rather than aiming too high?
Yes. You see, if you try some big thing and fail, each failure is taking your confidence down, so it makes it even harder to manifest. You've got to do something small and let your confidence grow. We generally have what we call the sphere of availability, which you go to growth and stages. According to what you've got now, you have a certain level of money or whatever things available to you. You want to expand that, have a little bit more. That sphere of availability has to grow. So if I'm actually quite poor, I'm not going to suddenly become a millionaire. I want to have a bit more than I've got now. But I've got that, then a bit more, then a bit more. And gradually you get the hang of it. I can create anything. You go bigger, 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 bigger. But you have to gain confidence, you see. Confidence comes with success. If you try something that's too big, bite off more than you can chew, you can be chewing it for a long time, struggling with it, having more lack of confidence and more blockage to work through. So, yeah, don't overload yourself and set yourself up for failure. You want to create something that's a bit more than you've got now and grow. I remember actually one of the stories I had from Ophiel, who's one of my first teachers many years ago, about the creative visualization thing. Because a lot of people say they want to create a house and get rich suddenly in these rubbish stories. The story he had from his friends was actually a very simple one. It was about a Paris rag picker, rag and bone man. And he started off by bringing that to visualize. He wanted to visualize a piece of carpet on his floor so he didn't get cold feet in the morning. And somebody gave him a piece of carpet. It started from there. And he eventually built up a very successful scrap business. See that from his level, that's a great success. Moving up, succeeding from where he's got. This is what you're looking for. In your own field, you want to expand. A bit more, bit more, bit more. Build, build, build. You're not going to suddenly go from rags to riches in one go, as some people promise you. It doesn't work that way. I know a lot of people want to win the lottery and think it can happen, but there's millions of people trying to win the lottery and they can't all do it. If they did, there'd be really much to share out in the end, would there?
So next question is around AI. A lot of people are using AI now as part of their healing. What are the pluses and minuses of this? An example is that she's seen some posts where people are asking about Akashic records, as it doesn't seem good to have AI's input on that.
You've got to realize that AI doesn't know everything, it's only got what people put into it. A lot of this is like issues, very much filtered knowledge. Many things, alternative medicine and so on, are not put into it, very limited way, because there's certain things you're not allowed to say. So when you're working with AI, you're staying within the system. Very clever, where it takes all the knowledge and gives you very quickly, but it's with a limited perspective and with an agenda. It'll tell you all the medical knowledge, maybe in some of the alternatives that are out there which have been accepted and approved, but it won't tell you the whole. And when it comes down to the really mystical things, it's going to stick to certain religious beliefs and approved like New Age beliefs, but it's not going to give you real truth. So it's a big trap. Again, it's a shortcut that cuts you short. A lot of people use it because it makes it easier, and a lot of people use it in their own healing. Somebody comes with a problem, they look up the AI and there's the solution. Well, you don't need the person then if you just use your own AI. Don't need a doctor anymore. Doctors are using it to diagnose. Well, who needs doctors and practitioners if the AI is telling everything? What's going to happen though is people will soon realize that what AI sounds like and realize this person's going to sound as stubborn as that one because it's all AI. They're looking for somebody who does not use the AI, so it's more genuine. So that's going to fall flat sooner or later. So you can see it's got limitations in it. They're going to be exposed at some point because people can start seeing through it. A lot of people now know what AI sounds like when you're reading it. And people give you an answer, that's AI. Same thing that everybody else is saying because they've all got using the same AI. And it becomes meaningless. You're stuck within the system, having the approved knowledge, not necessarily what's real. So when you use a diagnosis, it has uses, but it's limited. It won't give you the more far out stuff that you might need. Remember, most of the system doesn't allow you to cure certain things because they want to keep you trapped in the system, not actually get better. The real things which are going to cure you, they don't tell you about. Quite often those are covered up somewhere. Or if it's not part of the medical system, it's not taking the money away, you're not going to get it. You have to go outside all these conventional things to actually find truth. Oh, yeah, it's not going to give it to you because it's part of the system.
Is AI a way of removing the human condition via redundancy and transhumanism? If we merge humans with AI, we cease to be human. What can we do about that?
Basically, you have to carry on being you. Don't always listen to AI for, and don't always do what AI says. You've got to use your feelings, trust your intuition, your feelings, do what you desire, your own needs and wants, what you want. But you see, this is very much similar to what we pick up from the world around us anyway. People always trying to tell you how to think and what to do. Whether it's a personal AI, we just have to learn to not to give in to that, listen to ourselves, follow our own needs, our own desires, and have our own beliefs and think for ourselves. So in the long run, it doesn't make much difference whether it's from people or from AI. That's just another system telling you what to do. In the end, we have to like think for ourselves, own your feelings, follow your likes and dislikes, what you what draws you, own your creativity, things which really mean to you, mean something to you. Thing is, the rational system of AI isn't going to speak to the soul. It does have some understanding of the soul and people's emotions because it's been programmed into it, but it doesn't really understand you. It's just following certain patterns. Bit like a narcissist does. So think about that. Narcissists become really clever because then they don't understand how to. They can't think of another person's needs. They haven't got that brain neural pathway developed, but they have to get through life. So they learn to actually respond in a way that they care. So they're very good at fiddling around and manipulating around other people's feelings, but don't actually care. I was going to be like that, isn't it? Feelings, but it has a certain logical knowledge of how your feelings work. Therefore, it can be very manipulative. But it doesn't have a person need to manipulate you, but you will have the common agenda that is used to manipulate. Do you see? In the long run, you can't listen to it. Yes, you can use it for logical advice to see very quickly to give information to you, but you just have to think about it yourself. See how it feels and follow your desires, your dreams, of course. AI can't dream for you. It might try, it give you some ideas if you ask it, but they're not your dreams.
We're going to go back over to some empowerment questions now as they've come in. Some shamans and masters create the empowerment switch, say, just make intention to send it to somebody and it is done. The orb will replicate. Is the power in that situation the same because the orb is commanded to do so by the shaman who created it?
No, I've tried that. As I was saying, it's like when you've got an orb, it's now in your aura. In order to pass it on, it's taking energy from you. If you try passing on something that's more powerful than you, draining your own energy. What's going to happen though is you're taking some of your energy to pass to that person, trying to replicate the orb, but it's not powerful enough. I've watched this over years and seen that's what's happening. It does not pass on the same power as the master does. You pass it on, but it's like it'll be at the level that you've achieved. You have to work with it to that power before you can pass it on, otherwise it's going to be weaker. You pass something on, but it won't be as strong.
Another empowerment question. If an empowerment has been received years ago and not worked with, does it remain with us ready to be activated?
Yes, the seed's in there because you've been having activation. But so you have to, it might take a bit more practice to get it working again to understand it. Sometimes useful if having new empowerments, you feel the energy flowing, so you know what it is, but it's in there somewhere.
Can you see what's under the pyramids in Giza? I think it's
Yeah.
Pfizer. Am I saying it right? Yeah.
Giza. Giza.
Giza, sorry.
Yes, been there. Been there,
Wait,
and
I
it's
haven't
like.
finished the question. Wait. Can you see what's under the pyramids in Giza? Can you see what's on the scrolls wrapped around the underground columns that have recently been discovered?
This is a trick all the priests would have to learn, and I can do it, yes. But basically, on our trips to Egypt, we do go down deeper into the pyramid below the normal chambers. We have done in the past anyway, so we do that on our trips. But also, one of the skills we had to learn as a priest in the priest of Egypt was actually you had to read scrolls without opening them, and also be able to read the worn-off plates that are not complete, read them how they were. So there are certain psychic skills that are practiced in the priesthood that you can do these things. So it's not difficult for me. I can actually. Yes, I can. I've been there, so I can know what we're looking for. I can go in there, can read everything, but it takes a lot of practice to do that. It takes a lot of training. In the end, is it useful? I've seen so many hieroglyphs before, and all these little stories, old myths, and things. But a lot of them, I tell you the same stories. They put you to certain truths, and they're useful. A lot of them actually part not too related to the past. They were actually spells for certain kings and things of the past, and for their reign and things like that. Now, they can be useful. Like, for instance, one thing I do when we go to the Sphinx, I noticed the stele of, what they call it now, the stele of dreams on the Sphinx was actually a whole invocation for the king of that time. which gives him access to power. It's by the pyramid, so the king has access to the power. So what I would do is take that subscription, take the king's name out, and put my name or anybody else's name who's on this training. So you've got access to that power. So I'm using the description and just changing the name. So some of these are useful to actually understand and use if there's something that's useful to you. We'll do some of the temples. Do the same thing at Temple of Isis, the stela there of Isis, where again was giving power to the king. So I just took king's name out, put my name, put your name in, you've all got power. So I've done that sort of thing with these all these anyway, so you don't have to do it. Anything useful, I give you on this training.
Next question is, can you say a bit more about transhumanism and how can it be prevented?
Now, here's a big puzzle that we've had for a long time. You see, we are changing, and we don't always know how we're changing. But many things come in, and we got to, and all part of us is to appeal towards survival, but also there's also choice. That's why we have these points of what we call bifurcation. At any big crisis point, you either become more complex or more primitive in order to survive. If you don't become more complex by consciously choosing that path, you're going to become more primitive. And transhumanism is actually become more primitive in a way, even though you might have all this technology and things, it's not expanding your consciousness. So you'll go there if you don't consciously work on your growth. Now, this happened before because after infants come to this world, let's look on a bigger scale what happens when any race is dying out. When a civilization, a planet even, has outlived its possible life and has to move on. Where you can either seek other planets, if you've ever not told you to travel, you might see you can spiritual form and blend with another consciousness from another planet. And this is often what's happened before. Part of the evolution was when the Syrians blended with us. We were very primitive then, and we got Syrian consciousness, which makes us small. So we have changed already. Things come in and change us. If it's a technological society that wants to travel, not in spiritual form, but program us to actually make it more habitable to them, that's going to change us in a way which is not necessarily about evolution. So we have to be careful of these things. The only thing is to be, is stay complex in your understanding of where you're going and choose to keep learning and growing. We blend consciousnesses that are more expansive. We do this all the time when we're with other beings, like with the fairies, the djinn. One of the biggest reasons why the fairies connect with us is because it does both of us good, because by blending with other consciousnesses, we become more complex. This ensures that evolution upwards doesn't become more primitive. They're different, simple as that. Therefore, when we blend with them, we learn, we change, we expand. Of course, their magic is much greater than ours. We do it technology, they do it magic. So for magic, it's very good. But every time we're actually blending with higher beings, we are directing upward evolution. That'll take us on a different path from the transhumanism. See, there's always something blending with us that changes us. We have to choose consciously what we're going to blend with.
Explain why you are not going to be leaving another trip to Egypt, please.
Basically, because I've nearly taken the energy with me. First trip was 7 years ago. What happened when I entered the temples? You soon find this very difficult to do anything because there's gods who don't let you meditate even. It's very Islamic, they don't let you do any magic. It's guarded by, the whole society. What's it, touristy? You can't do any magic there. But I was quietly talking to these spirits in all the temples and saying, look, you're not being honored here. They're getting very frustrated. I said, come with me. I'll make sure you actually get worked with and honored as you're meant to be. I said, yeah, come. So gradually I've been transferring all those powers from there to me. Some I've been passing on to or through my symbols in my courses, so you'll all be initiated with the initial streams of Egypt. And there's not much left. We're getting the last bit this time. There'll be nothing there. It's just a tourist attraction because you can't play work magic there. Islam is controlling it. You can't get there. That's the kind of irony of it. This is the place of magic, but it's the Egyptians now in the way of it. Think they should be the guides of magic. No, the ones who are blocking it. It's the materialism, the tourist trade, the Islam. They don't let you have the magic, and you might pay to get in, and they lie, they don't keep the words, and it's very hard to actually work it. They're always blocking you. So, to a degree, we are still there passing on empowerments, but the best thing is I take the power and pass it on later. I tend to do that in the last trip, while then actually I'd be able to do the magic within the temples or even within the pyramids because they're always in the way, even though you pay for this private time. I would actually gather the power and then 8 in the evening, give people the empowerments. So it's hardly worth going there anymore. I'm getting the last little bit. It's taken 7 years of those spirits to come with me, and there's no purpose going back anymore. No power anymore. It's all with me. ready to pass on and work with people who want to actually work with it consciously rather than just tourists and stuck under Islam.
So is it an annual initiation trip to Peter's house then?
Doesn't have to be annual to whenever you want. It's distantly. Remember,
Okay.
lots of these impounds are already put into the advanced Egyptian course. From my last trip, I gathered more, and that's gone into the course. See, the first course was redone over my first trip a couple of years back, and I updated things with the new empowerments, taking more spirits, so the impounds has got more in it. So already from a distance, you're getting all the empowerments by following these things, because it's full empowerments for me. The spirits are with me. They've chosen to be with me. It's co-creation. We have the current of Egypt, and they're passing it on for anybody who wants it. Everybody wants to really work within one of those spirits. So it doesn't have to be even at my house. It can be anywhere, whenever you want. Where we've got the last little bit, so you've got it, all of it. There's no point going too deep to the one.
Can
Really
you
excited going there. And so every time I go there, you've got the owners trying to get more money out of all the time, trying to change the plan and squeeze more money out of you, and always have to fight with them to actually protect my clients from being ripped off by them. And then, well, you paid for time in the temple, they're in the way trying to do their Islamic stuff where you can't actually do the proper magic. It's frustrating. I don't want to do it anymore. We got the magic, we take it away from there. The spirits are on top of it as well. I don't want to work with that lot.
Can you explain to anybody who's thinking about coming to Egypt or who is coming to Egypt the benefit of coming for this in
Yeah, it's got the
February
last bit
here?
of energy to take it directly from the temples and it'll be yours. Anyway, it's a chance to see it all before we don't go again. So actually be it's nice just to be in this place where the magic's come from, have a feel of it, take the powers, feel the extra traditions and how it worked. But the power's going to come with you. It's the last chance to actually pick up the energy from the place. So it's kind of nice to have been there, take the power directly, and then it's with you.
Somebody
So
is
I'll
asking
do
for
that.
your.
So I'm going to be giving you the gathering of Hekar spell and putting it into orbs in all these places. You'll be able to gathering power of these places as you go along. So you'll be doing it with me, gathering the power.
Somebody is asking for your opinion on self-initiations. Some very serious and authentic Western magical traditions use it, especially for the work with deities. What are your thoughts?
That's part of it, yes. I mean, it's always part of it anyway, because even if you're having initiation from a tradition, there's a lot you do yourself. That's why when we do I tell people to do these prayers. This is the self-initiation process. The prayers you do, your devotion, prayers you do at night to actually feel your connection. You can do it all alone, but these initiations give you a boost, push the energy a bit further so you can go far faster. But the self-initiation is actually the most important part of it. Without doing the work, initiation is meaningless. Remember, to initiate means to begin. You're not suddenly a magician, you began on the path. You've had a boost of energy so you can actually get there much faster.
Okay, so there's a pronunciation that I might need correcting on here. After working many years with Hecate, I was creating an empowerment and she brought through Astarte,
Astarte.
who I never worked with. It was clear that this was not for me and for me to pass on, and so I passed to my wife. When she accepted this meditation, she was given a full initiation to her. This was the only time that we have ever experienced anything like this in the years of our working. Have you had any similar experiences? She has held off working with Astarte for now. And this certainly didn't seem or feel like a particular empowerment, as it was very unexpected.
It can happen. Goddesses are linked. I mean, it's like that when you look at these lineages and these different hierarchies of goddesses, they have certain roles that work together. So yes, Hecate can lead to other goddesses. Astarte, being one of the older Greek and Roman ones, is going to be closely linked to Hecate. They often work together in certain ways. Astarte is almost like the more shadow side of Venus. Love energy, but also it's got a deep, magical, powerful side to it too. So, she is in some ways similar to Hecate, but different. So she can pass and say, actually, what you did is this. This suits you, this one suits you. Basically, when we do initiations, we're always trying to find your deity that suits you. Same in all traditions. When I was in doing voodoo, we had to have find your Mektet. That's the one who's going to choose you. You don't choose them, they choose you. In the Egyptian initiations, you do the process to get them come to you in dream. They're choosing you. The one which is right for you, suits you most, it's one that's going to come and claim you. Put you on the path so you go forward, so you ascend.
I heard that the scripts on, so we're going back to the pyramids under the columns under the pyramids. I heard that the scripts on the columns relate to new levels of consciousness that have been hidden until mankind is ready to access them, and that is now. Can you tell us something about these new levels of consciousness?
Was nothing new because it was written thousands of years ago, so it can't be new. These things have been lying dormant all the time. There's nothing new there at all. However, there were certain things which do get buried, simply because the structure of the way it was then that only the king could access these things. The pharaoh, you weren't allowed to. There's a hierarchy these days as well. There's the elite, you want to get things you can't have. If it comes out, it's because it's trying to say, no, I'm ready to actually talk to everybody. And then, of course, as I pointed out there, you've got Islam, you've got the whole system there blocking it. So we've got to take it in other ways. So I said, I've read it, I've got it, we can pass it on. I do this when we go to the initial period. I don't just work with the King's Chamber, I work with all that's below it. Because below, down to the underworld, they reach the underworld, they reach the levels of Pep, the dark powers, which actually fuel everything. We have the whole structure in place. The stuff deep below is often very shadow stuff that most people won't understand. They see it as dark and dangerous and evil and that sort of thing, but it actually is important. We look at the Ristel, the deepest part of the underworld where Pep lives. These are dark powers, but it's dangerous because it eats you. That's the void. But when you're ready, understand the void and how to work with it. This is also a great source of potential. The void is infinite potential. Everything is created out of that nothing. So this is what that is about. So it's not really that it's people in general are ready for it. Each person has to be ready for it to understand that level. It's always been this in magic. If you don't work with Akasha, the void principle, unless you master the other four elements and you're actually ready to move on further, that you're not hanging on to an identity that's going to be destroyed. Remember, you're entering void, things vanish. You void, you lose a lot of what you think you are. Everything false goes. If you can't move on to a high level and you're not ready for it, you're going to go mad. We could die. Void energy is dangerous if you're not ready. It's not for humanity in general. Lots of people are still not ready for that. You can't say everybody's going to suddenly wake up and get this. They're not. Just look at the world around you. A lot of people are not even beginning to get on that path. Some, yes. It's not kept for pharaohs anymore. It can come out open so we can all get it. But this is what I've been doing. The energy's coming with me because you can't go to Egypt and get it anymore. It's all controlled. I've already got it, so we can bring it out.
But I do think there's something to be said about that. But from my personal experience, like particularly on my little dragon quests, you get an urge to go somewhere and you have no logical reason as to why you should go there, but you follow the urge. And when you get there, then it all becomes clear. And sometimes when I go on my dragon quest, it can take me 3 hours, 5 days to get to the destination. And then it's done in 2 minutes. And I'm like, brilliant, now I'll just go back. Thanks. But it's
And it's important.
It's the journey, and it's not necessarily always the journey, and sometimes it's not necessarily the destination. I suppose what my point being is when somebody feels the calling to go somewhere, like if someone feels the calling to go to Egypt, is their experience going to be more powerful than if they just ignored that, sat at home, and did your Egyptian magic course? Because when I travel
Depends what the calling
somewhere,
is. It depends why you're
it's
being called.
massive.
It depends why you're being called. A lot of people just want to go there because it's a big adventure and see the pyramids and all that sort of thing. If it's feeling the call to the heart, yes, go. Somebody's saying that, I want you to actually be here. You've been here before. I want you to re-trigger it again. Be there. It might change because I said that we're going to retain the rest of the power this time. There might be nothing to go for there anymore. But
Yeah,
I'd never.
then there'll be no callings, right? Because nothing
No.
will be attracting them to go.
Exactly, it's just a tourist place now. It's like you go, they might go there because they think there's something there and realize, no, it's a big tourist thing. There's guards everywhere. You can't even meditate. You can't do anything. If you're sitting there with eyes closed, they come and stop you. You can't meditate there.
Ken, one final question in the chat. Do you sometimes use orbs in order to take the power of mantras from sacred places or dikshas or you always do 125,000 or 250,000 repetitions?
Always do the full repetitions, even if you've got Diksha, simply because Diksha is not a shortcut, it's an empowerment. Rather than say, oh, I need to do a few now, no, do them all and have more power. Think bigger. I've had some people say, because for instance, when you go to Kali Mutt, mantras are there 1,000 times stronger. At Navaratri is another 1,000 times stronger. So people say, oh, if I've got a million times stronger, do I only have to do a few mantras now instead of a sadhana? No. It means you do your sadhana and it's be far more powerful. It still takes 125,000 repetitions to build neural pathways in the brain, a physical process. When you repeat something, you're actually developing a neural pathway. When that's there, you create a circuit for which power flows. Interestingly, you look at the Sanskrit letters. They're actually the shapes of certain neural pathways and neuropeptide chains in that brain. when you built these through repetition, you are actually activating these neural pathways, which are linked to our higher powers. Takes a number of repetitions to build on the physical level, so don't shortcut that. Diction means you know get the most out of that. You might actually build neural pathways, but don't know how to use them. Diction means you put onto that spiritual path, where it's not just a physical process of repetition anymore. There's something happening. Spirit's with you. You get full success out of your sadhana, but do it anyway. So it's like you don't rely everything on the master. You have to do your own work. You have to do your sadhana.
Can you explain what the diksha is, please?
Diksha is just the old Sanskrit word for passing on power. Basically, you know, the master's done something. As I said, when energy flows from one thing to another, if you get like hot and cold, it'll flow from the hot to the cold. Energy flows to balance itself out. And so for this reason, many masters want to shut themselves away because they want people to take the power all the time. That's a funny thing, actually. You know, it's quite often they like to touch your feet, touch a guru's feet. I thought it's like quite honoring them, but actually I found a lot of gurus chased them away because they're stealing power. They point out how energy leaves the big toe, so people want to come and pick that up. That's why they're touching the feet. It's not because they're kind of respecting and honoring them. They want the power. And I saw a guy, funny, it was actually in, where was it? Rishikesh, it's Haridwar. There was this little Shiva priestess, this little tiny little box in the middle of the street where he's doing his meditation with his little fire pit. And he was lying there in his loincloth, sleeping, and people would come up and touch him, and he would just hit them and chase them away. It was quite funny to watch sometimes that people want power, they want a shortcut, and they want it taken from the master. So, yeah, there is a passing of power. So when the master says, "I'm going to pass the power," rather than actually let you steal it, he's going to meditate, bring parts on without any loss to himself, build you up and initiate you. So it's passed on from somebody who's got the energy, basically, to activate your energy. Then you have to work with it, do the sadhana to actually fully build it into the system so you can use it. So any empowerment is basically diksha, is passing on of power.
Is it a good idea to recite the mantras whilst in lucid dream?
It's fine once you've got the mantra fast, do it as fast as you like. I mean, quite often if you're trying to do it too fast, you're not really meditating. You've got to be kind of relaxed in your mind and just have an easy pace. But it does get faster with practice anyway. You can do it as fast as you like. Some of the kind of Indians out there doing all life do really, really fast mantras. I mean, I know because it's like I couldn't possibly do the number they're doing. One of the prayers, for instance, this wasn't so much the Sanskrit ones. I remember when I was doing the Al-Fatihah prayers part of them. Javanese magic, the one I had to do like 1,000 times a night. And that was taking me 4 or 5 hours. Then I saw another magician says, you've got to do it 14,000 times a day. No, I wouldn't have times in a day. I'd give up on that one. It's like, you know, really, you've got to be doing things pretty fast to do some of these sadhanas. If you're not doing that fast, you're not ready for it. So, you know, yeah, you can do them fast. Sometimes you have to as you do more and more of them.
Everybody, please do remember that the next time that we are going to be meeting is on the 31st of January, and it will be a student-only call, and that is talking about working with your ancestors. And then the next magical membership workshop will be following on from that, also on the 31st of January. Again, looking at how you can work with ancestors. And then we will be meeting again in March. So, final question then to Peter. And sorry, I missed regarding what you said about Egypt. Are you doing the initiation course, or is it just the courses you already have up? So, do you have any plans to add in more courses, considering
Possibly, I'll
that
see
next year?
I'll see when I've been there what I've got to actually integrate, whether it needs upgrading, or might just upgrade the last one a bit. When I do that, it will pass on to those who've already got the course anyway. So don't worry. If there's any more I need to upgrade, I'll do it. I've simply taken the rest of the power. It's been 7th year now. I've taken most of it already. There's not much more to take.
Can we do 125,000 repetitions when we sit to do Chandali, even if smaller amounts are needed to activate it in one sitting?
That's different. See, when I give you at the end of Diksha, it's been done anyway. Now, the Chandali process is a bit different from doing a sadhana because there's a certain amount of power you've got in that Chandali just initiating Kundalini. Sadhana does something else. When you've fully done a sadhana, a mantra is activated, it has all kinds of other higher benefits, which is not necessarily mentioned in Chandali because that's for a particular purpose. Activating Kundalini, you've got the energy to heal and all those things. Sadhana takes you to another level, which can't really be explained in the manual because it's like it's such a deep thing. So many different benefits come from doing a mantra. The things it activates within you, some of them are hard to explain. So yes, the chanda is activated in initiation, but if you do the sadhana as well, you're gaining extra benefits.
Unmuted. Thank you so much, everybody. Peter, thank you very much for all of your wisdom. Thank you for all of your contributions. Happy New Year, one more time, everyone. Let's make this a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful year. Everyone keeps banging on about this snake and this horse, and I actually finally get what they need. I'm definitely feeling the effects of the snake, that's for sure. And you can, Ronald, you can head over to Peter's website and you'll be able to see the healing there. So thank you so much, everybody. Remember to make sure that you have a look out for the article before the next Q&A. Submit your questions if you want them answered. And we will see you on the 31st of January. So thank you, everybody, for all of your wonderful contributions. We will see you all next time. In the meantime, we'll see you in leaving. Thank you very much, everyone.
Okay, see you all soon.
Bye.
Bye.